All right, so I am going to be the last person to talk today. You can cheer. Yay. So the Internet Archive and OpenLibrary.org, it's actually interesting too. And earlier today we were talking about some of the happy accidents of how we organized this by alphabetically, but it seems to have been organized thematically as well. While we were talking, I was also thinking another way that it's organized thematically as well as alphabetically is by organizing body. The first two were organized by national or international bodies. We then had a corporate organizing body. We then had an academic approach. And what we really have with the Internet Archive is an idiosyncratic approach that was developed primarily from the brain of one person that has really grown into this huge international organization. The Internet Archive does a little bit of a lot of things, or they do a lot of things, actually. This is the Internet Archive site. You've all probably seen it. The Internet Archive was founded first as a nonprofit with the idea to build an internet library, and the idiosyncratic visionary for this was a person named Brewster Kahle, and he still goes around and talks a lot. He still has a lot to do with the Internet Archive. The primary mission is the preservation of information, and the goal is to avert a digital dark age. Brewster's thought was, history didn't stop during the Dark Ages. Lots happened. We just don't know about it because it wasn't written down. It wasn't preserved in a way that we have access to. And that's what makes it a Dark Age, not what actually was happening necessarily. The internet, he saw, was a potentially new Dark Age. If this information disappeared, we wouldn't know what happened and how we got to where we are. So that was his goal. Toward that end, the Internet Archive really has taken on a huge number of projects. The one that most people know is the Wayback Machine. That's the archive of the internet, or an attempt to archive pages on the internet. That has about 150 billion pages that have been archived since 1996. So that by far is the biggest of the Internet Archive projects in terms of items preserved, 150 billion. Another thing that they're collecting are audio collections. They have lots of different audio collections and sub-collections within their audio collections realm. One of my favorites is the Trade Friendly Band collection. You can download full concerts from the Grateful Dead. You can download the Del McCurry Band. My new favorite bands that I listen to while putting this slide together is on the Internet Archive, and it's called Yo Mama's Big Fat Booty Band out of Asheville, North Carolina. They're really good. So they also have a moving image archive. The Prelinger Archive, I think, was the name of the initial seed for this, but they've since been getting a whole bunch of film strips from the 1950s that are up there. There are some great videos about how to be a librarian from the 1950s. There's just a lot of really great moving images in the archives. For information, there are about 1.1 million audio files in the audio collection. There are about 600,000 moving images in the moving image collection. They also have a software collection where they have archived the Two Cows shareware software library. They've also archived a few other shareware and freeware libraries and also some community-generated patches for software that no longer is supported. That has about 37,000 items, so probably one of the smallest projects that the Internet Archive is taking on. The one that we are probably the most interested in, particularly in terms of the grant, is the ebooks and texts collection, and which also ties into a group called OpenLibrary.org. And that total collection has about 3.2 million items in it. One of my favorite really tiny projects that they have is the Internet Archive Digital Bookmobile. The tagline is a million books inside. So they have a van that has pretty much an espresso-style book machine, a printing book machine. You can go in, you can pull up the book you want. It's a satellite connection, and then you can walk away with a printed book, whatever you want out of their million book collection that they have there. $1 per book is what they're advertising that for, and that will go around California primarily. Looking at their ebook and text archive, though, as I mentioned, there are about 3.2 million items. Those are divided across multiple collections. The largest of those collections is a collection of items that have been scanned by American libraries, mostly as part of the Open Content Alliance, which I don't really talk about here, but that's this kind of other organization that's built around on the side that has a large component of that is archiving content from public libraries in the Internet Archive, and they do some other things, but they really were a reaction as well to the Google Books group. So they will sign on academic libraries. The American Libraries collection has about 1.6 million items. There's a Canadian Libraries collection with about 360,000 items. There is what they call the Universal Library, which is related to the Million Books Project, which is primarily a non-English and even primarily non-Romance language digitization project based out of India and China for the most part. They have about 106,000 items stored in Internet Archive, but that's growing quite substantially as well. There's actually 1.5 million items in the Million Books Project, so I'm not sure why there's that distinction between those, what's in the Internet Archive proper and what's as part of the Million Books Project. They also have a section called Community Texts. These are items that people can contribute either of their own work, of work that they own rights to and are willing to cede a copyright to Internet Archive, or are items that are pre-1923 that are scanned by individuals. So there are individuals out there who are slapping a book on a scanner to help take part in this. That's relatively small, but growing, 132,000 items. Internet Archive is also the archive for the Project Gutenberg texts. Project Gutenberg, and I had to be reminded of this when I was looking this over, one of the real ways that they differ, they're probably the oldest of these book digitization or digital book projects. They're actually not a book digitization project per se, in that they're not primarily built by scans that are stitched together to be a nice visual representation of the book. They're primarily texts. Project Gutenberg really is around preserving the text content, not an image of the book. But their 37,000 items are archived at Internet Archive. They also have a children's library of mostly 19th century children's books, which is really fun to look at. That's about 3,000 items. They have a biodiversity heritage library, which has 64,000 items. And they have this other collection. I don't remember quite what they call it. I didn't put it on the slide, and I should have. But it's basically other collections. And that's everything from ant genome to comic books to musical scores. It's a whole hodgepodge of other things. The nice thing is when you go into the text collection and you search at the top level, you're searching across all of their collections, or you can go into individual libraries, individual collections to search. This one is, we had an Alice in Wonderland. This is Alice's Adventures Underground, being a facsimile of the original manuscript book afterwards developed into Alice's Adventures in Wonderland. So you can get access to that. The American Libraries collections have lots of contributors to it, including Bowdoin. Bowdoin has contributed texts. It appears through a Lyrisys collaboration with Internet Archive. One of the nice things for the libraries that have partnered with Internet Archive, either through a partner organization like Lyrisys or directly, is you can also, not only do you get a copy that you can put into your own repository, you also have a kind of landing page on Internet Archive for your book's contents. So there are lots of libraries that have that as well. One of the great things about content that is available through the Internet Archive is it is free and in multiple formats. Because Internet Archive really has tried to avoid, at least for this, for the main Internet Archive site, has tried to avoid having this distinction between, hey, we have these books that we can show you part of, but you can't get a whole access to it. They're really only interested in providing materials that you can have access to. Therefore, the vast majority is pre-1923, although they do have copyright clearance and Creative Commons license materials outside of those dates. And like I said, some content is creator supplied. They will also put the content up in multiple formats. So when you get to an item, you can get it in PDF, you can get it in EPUB, you can get it in what they've labeled as Kindle, but it's a Mobi format, so it's Kindle compatible format. They have a lot of their material is available through DAISY, which is for visually impaired and reading impaired people. You can get an audio version of the book. It's not necessarily a recorded, or it's not a recorded audio of someone reading the book. It's actually a computerized audio, but the DAISY file has the text with the audio being read at the same time. Many of the books have been OCR'd, so you have full text. And there's also Deja Vu format, which is a really nice format that, with the Deja Vu reader, you can zoom in really tight onto the image. So these are high quality scans, so you can get really into, if you're interested in typology or, you know, the typesetting, or if you're interested in something in an image, you can really zoom in with the Deja Vu format. Preservation is really, as I mentioned at the beginning, is really a key to the Internet Archive, or is at least a key component of what they have tried to do. They take the digitized objects and they generate multiple formats for those. They have automated backup and integrity checks that run across all of their servers. They mirror their servers in multiple locations, and they also perform format migration from formats that they have in their collection to new formats, so the content should survive through time. They also have extensive metadata for all of their objects, some of which you can search, some of which you can view, and some of which is used in the background, but that includes descriptive metadata that you can actually view as a MARC record, or use metadata that allows you to know what kind of licensing is allowed, as well as preservation metadata that it records how the object was originally created and some of the steps that have been used to stitch it together into a full object. They also have some pretty interesting physical preservation aspects. They have a plan for preserving over 10 million physical volumes. I couldn't find how many they currently have preserved, but the books that they are scanning, if they are not being asked to send them back to the organization that's scanning them, and in some cases they're not, they are taking those books, they're boxing them up, and then putting those boxes stacked on pallets in a warehouse in converted shipping containers so that they are rodent, water, pest, humidity controlled. So about 1,000 books, 960 books per pallet roughly is what they're estimating. And there's a nice picture that I should have grabbed for you that shows all of those shipping containers stacked on top of each other. It's a really fascinating way for a dark, pretty dark, maybe dim archive of physical objects, all of which have been scanned. So retrieval is very limited for that. Also interesting, they are physically preserving the hard drives that as they cycle through hard drives in their data system, they as they run through to the end of the hard drive's life, they'll mirror the hard drive, they'll pull it out, and they're actually physically archiving those old hard drives as well. So they're just kind of, you know, like I said, it kind of comes back to Brewster Kahle's idiosyncratic approach. You know, he's decided to do some things that maybe an organization or a committee might not. But who knows? Maybe it's the right way to do it. So I think it's really fascinating to see what they're doing. Their funding comes from a lot of different places. They have had corporate sponsors. Microsoft, particularly for the text portion of the Internet Archive, Microsoft was a major sponsor until about 2008, I believe, was when they left the system. They digitized Microsoft using Microsoft-owned material, Microsoft scanners, and Microsoft personnel. They digitized about 300,000 of the books that are in the Internet Archive. They decided that they weren't going to continue that. However, when they discontinued that, they actually gave all their equipment, all of their files, all of their materials to the Internet Archive. So the Internet Archive didn't at least lose out on that transaction. Yahoo actually has sponsored a large amount of their digitization. The Sloan Foundation, lots of other grant foundations have organized that. They also have funding both in cash and in kind from partner organizations. And those partner organizations are individual libraries. Many of those are ARL libraries, or through their consortial partners, the Boston Library Consortium, the University of California Systems, CARLI, College Association of Academic Research Libraries in Illinois, and Lyrisis, which Bowdoin helped contribute content through. So the books that are in their text collection come from a number of different sources. They'll come primarily from library partners. How are library partners and partner libraries different? I don't know. They will come from content creators. They will come from individuals who are scanning books or who have created the books. And the processes are kind of multiple different processes. There are local scanning operations set up at many of the partner libraries. There are also 23 Internet Archive managed scanning centers that are set up in 5 different countries. Most of those, however, are in the US. Those use the Scribe workstations. However, the Scribe workstations are also in use at some of the individual libraries that have partnered. It's a real bit of a hodgepodge of how that process is there, but they have some pretty good standards for how the images should be created. And then they also actually have a distributed proofreading team that you can sign up to be part of so that you can go through and make sure that OCR that happens is accurate, and you can help contribute time and energy to the Internet Archive. The goal for I thought I had another slide. All right, so one of the other projects that Internet Archive has taken part in is something that they've called the Open Library. The Open Library has a goal to create one web page for every book ever published. Many places have called this an open source WorldCat. In some ways, that's kind of what they're trying to be. They're trying to create a giant catalog of records about books that's searchable. They currently have about 20 million records, mostly from harvesting large catalogs and from individual contributions. You can go onto the site, log in, and contribute information about books that you have on your shelf if they're not in their catalog already. When those are in the system, if the catalog record in the Open Library system represents an item that's part of Internet Archive, they will have links to the item for viewing and for full text. And I do put in the important note that the Internet Archive and OCLC have discussed working together, and hopefully this will yield a joint project, but nothing has been finalized yet. The plans for Open Library have been actively shared with OCLC, and its records are available to OCLC. So Internet Archive wants to play with OCLC, obviously, or at least in so far, OCLC has not been willing to play with the Open Library organization and Internet Archive in that regard. They have a secondary goal of getting users as close to the document as possible. So their primary goal is to create a web page for every book ever published. Their secondary goal is to get users to those books. So they actually, when you find a book, will link not only to the Internet Archive copy, but they'll actually link to Amazon copies. They'll link to Google Books copies. They'll link up to external sources wherever they can. And this was built as an open project with open software, open data, open documentation, open contribution. You say open so many times and it kind of doesn't sound like a word anymore. But this is the Open Library. My slides were out of order. This is back on Internet Archive. This is the Scribe machine. This is the scanning machine that they use in the Internet Archive scanning system. So you can see it opens the book only a certain distance, so you're not breaking the binding. This is not a hack and scan type of system. It's really trying to preserve the book. Back to my Open Library. Here's the Open Library. So the Open Library is yours to explore, collect, and describe. One of the really interesting things is that very recently, And you probably saw an email, or hopefully saw an email, from our illustrious Linda Lord about this. The COSLA, the State Library and Librarians Association, has entered into a memorandum of understanding with Open Library, with Internet Archive and Open Library, to be members, I guess, is to be contributors and to be users. I'm not quite sure the exact wording to use for that. But the upshot of that is that if you are coming from a computer that is within Maine, you will see this little black bar at the top of the screen that says, "Hello! The Maine State Library is participating in our in-library lending program. Browse the growing lending library of over 200,000 ebooks." So Open Library has content that is not officially part of the Internet Archive. This content, here's more information about Open Library's secondary goal, and I'll talk about the lending library. So they have links to over a million free ebook titles, mostly from the Internet Archive pre-1923. That little black bar at the top of the page, welcoming us from Maine, is about the lending library. The lending library has 200,000 digitized ebooks, and these are post-1923 in copyright works. So 1923 to 1999 is the frame or the reference period that they're currently using for the Open Library system. Access to these books is granted to member users, and everyone in Maine is now a member because of the State Library Organization or State Library Association, State Librarians Association, MOU, on a one book, one user model. One of the interesting things in the way that they're justifying this is that these 200,000 digitized ebooks are physical books that have been donated by member libraries, and those physical books are scanned and then archived again in a dark archive, taken out of print circulation, physical circulation, and put into a print analogous circulation online. So hence the one book, one user model. And so physical items are archived post-scanning. The Maine State Library, on behalf of the whole state, is a partner. Individual libraries within the state can also be partners, and I'll mention that at the very end. So if you are a partner, or if you are someone who wants to check out a book, clicking on the link in the black bar brings you to this page where it says you can borrow ebooks. And so there's the inside the registry for Windows 95, VC Andrews. It's a real hodgepodge of what is in those 200,000 books, because it's whatever was submitted by library members. So you can sign up in the upper corner. You create a username and password, and as long as you do this from any library that is located within the state of Maine, you should have access. You can then search, find a book that you're interested in. This is Tweedy's Global Patrol, a little golden book. And what you can see on the side is that you can borrow the book as a downloadable PDF, EPUB, or you can view in a browser. They do have links to physical copies that you can try to locate in WorldCat. And they also try to bring you to the object if you want to buy it, through A-Libris or Amazon or Powell's and the like. But when you actually view them, this one happens to be, you click in the book and then you can either read in browser, download a PDF or an EPUB. Just viewing it in the browser, there's some really great scans of books. This one you can see used to belong to someone named Amy. I'm sure she's proud to have her book in the collection. So libraries in Maine are invited, and this is why I joked that this was the practical part of the talk today. Any library in Maine is invited to send a book for digitization. These should be books that are 1923 to 1999 imprints. These books are not going to be returned to you. They are going to be put into a dark archive so that they can digitally be circulated. The first book that you send to Open Library is free. If you want to send them a large collection, because you really want to make a large collection of your books available through the Open Library system, it's approximately $40 per book thereafter. Libraries don't need to sign a contract or an MOU, but when you send the book, you're giving the book to Open Library.
Sending a book that's a duplicate is fine, and which is what we did, so we kept a print copy as well as giving them a print copy. And the address to send this and more information is on the Maine State Library webpage under digitization.
And at tinyurl.com/4xjnnb2, that actually brings you to the contribution form. One of the other benefits of actually sending a book in is back when you saw that black bar that said, hello, Maine State Library is a member. Right now, that's the default for any computer that's located in the state of Maine. When you send in your book, you also send them in your IP addresses. And if you're located in Maine, but instead you're actually located at Bangor Public Library from one of their machines, it'll say Bangor Public Library is a member. And then when you create your account, you'll forever be tied to Bangor Public Library instead of the state of Maine. Rather than try to really work out a lot of in-depth authentication issues so that your patrons who are at home get counted as a Bowdoin patron rather than a Maine State Library patron if they create an account, when they're off campus, they're a Maine State Library patron in this case because it's all IP access based. So that is my whirlwind tour of Internet Archive. Yeah.
So people can access these from home?
From anywhere in Maine. You can, now, if you're on a computer that's connected to an ISP whose servers are outside of Maine, it might not recognize that you're coming from Maine. So you might need to go to a library that is recognized as being in Maine in order to create your account. Once you create your account, you can travel wherever you want.
Start in a library in Maine to create your account.
Or start in a computer that's recognized as being in Maine. I did it from home. But I'm a GWI ISP subscriber, so they know that my servers are in Brewer and Biddeford, I think. All right. Thank you very much.